Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Night Watch on the Hinterlands by Kay Eason, narrated by Nicole Poole. Chapter 1. The scream sneaked into a gap between a bar full of shouted, intimate conversations and the Cretan blue cover band. Iari almost missed it, thought she imagined it. Voidspit band with its two stringy alwar, Sibs, guess that by their matching noses, howling like they were on fire, and a wild-haired Tenju wrestling with an auto-harp. The auto-harp appeared to be winning. It was a big harp. Then she heard it again, or thought she did, or her ears were ringing. She pitched forward onto her elbows and aimed her voice across the table. "You hear screaming?" Gare snorted. Long nostrils clamped almost shut, accompanied by a gusty blast of Vakari disapproval that Iari couldn't hear.
"They are terrible,"
he said, eyes stabbing the Alwar.
"But he's got talent, the tusky one."
"Not a joke." Iari shoved her chair back, shoved herself halfway to standing. She strained neck and shoulders to catch an eyeful of the door, which was open to the street, to the alley, really. Spilling watery yellow light, not unlike the beer, onto water-slick black pavement. One of the bouncers was frowning, staring into the night, with her head tilted like, yes, she'd heard something. Not that she'd stuck a toe out to investigate, though, and why would she? Not her job, to go stomping around B-Town at night looking for trouble. Technically, it was not Iari's job either. B-Town had civilian peacekeepers to handle local disturbances. A Templar handled Aedian business, Confederate business, and Iari was off duty in any case. This was time she should have been up in her room, out of the armor, reading, petting a cat. Tiny cat, tatter, maybe ghost if he'd bothered to stay in. No, here she was, drinking good beer and listening to bad music with the Five Tribes ambassador, while someone had an emergency. Iari took one last regretful swallow of the former and heaved herself fully vertical. Now she drew attention, less for her height and breadth, big but not outside normal parameters for a Tenju, than for the Templar armor. This wasn't a real battle rig, was barely armor at all. No shield, no helmet, no gauntlets, no slagging axe. Iari looked down at Gare. Only time she could, when he was sitting. Vakari were tall. The pigmentation on his cheeks shimmered in the dim overhead lights, bands of happy cerulean against the charcoal dark of his hide. The optic clamped to the bone and scale ridges over his left eye caught the light just so and flared an opaque, defiant cyan. Gare's jaw plates flared, flattened.
"You're going to investigate."
"Yeah, you can stay here." His gaze flickered around the pub, gathering up the stares, gauging the attitudes, reading auras if she knew him, which she did. He clenched a smile at her.
"Set at? No, I can't."
His rise was a more graceful unfolding, Vakari legs made longer with that extra central joint. Heads turned. Truth was, she'd worn the uniform tonight for this reason, besides feeling naked without it. She was one Templar, sure, barely armored at all, but the Aedian crest on the chest plate made people, not think, maybe, but at least stop before they did something stupid. It had been a generation since the accords with the Vakari Protectorate, and anyway, Gare was Five Tribes, from the friendly side of the Vakari front. There shouldn't be trouble at all, and he shouldn't need her or any Templar playing escort. But truth? Come on. He was one Vakar on a Tenju seed world in the galactic hinterlands. Might as well float a hollow target over his head, walk around saying, "Express your prejudice here." Iari put her hand on her own jacta, to make sure no one else grabbed it, because no way she'd fire a weapon in here, and broke a trail through the bar. Another advantage of that armor, people moved for her, too. Expressions shifted. Curiosity for a Templar, where was she going? Devolving into a twist of distaste for Gare. Oh, elements, is that a Vakar, really? A little fear, for her or for Gare, maybe both. At least one wet-eyed admirer of the Aedis. And then out, finally, past the bouncer, into a late autumn night wet with late autumn rain. She couldn't hear any screaming now. Just the gush of full gutters, and the sound bleed out of the club following them into the puddles. Gare tilted his head one way, then the other. Rain beaded on the long ridges running from his jawline along the length of his skull. Vakari's ears were somewhere under that bone.
"You know, if you wanted to leave, you could have just said..."
"Told you, I heard something."
She kicked into a jog, slipped in a slick of ptah-knew-what at the corner, caught herself in the next stride. It was all empty streets out here, but a few streets away, there was a glow on the low-slung clouds that didn't look like street lamp Teslas. Looked almost like the flicker of a house fire, but the color was wrong. Fire was orange. This was white. Blue. Looked cold, but Iari knew better. Ptah had many facets. All of the elements did. The fire that warmed also burned. The plasma that powered the void ships and made the stars could also liquefy metal and sublimate flesh. And when you took that plasma and bound it with arithmantic hexes and shoved it into a weapon, you got white fire, which didn't stop for rain or void, burned blue, and was entirely illegal except for Templars and Confederate troops and very special permits. The size of the glow and the brightness, and experience with both, told Iari its origin was maybe a block ahead, a sharp right at the corner, and they were rapidly covering that distance. Probably where the screams had come from. No, definitely. Gare pulled up beside her, those long Vakari legs finding a path over puddles.
"That's white fire."
"Yeah, I know."
"There are peacekeepers to handle this."
"People down here don't always call. PKs won't always answer. You're armed, right?"
She knew he was. Treaty legal monofill and sidearm jacta fully visible, where treaty said they should be. Arithmancy, less visible, more dangerous.
"Take that as a yes. Stay behind me."
Iari wished for her shield and her helmet and her axe, and then charged the rest of the way up the street, into the acrid breeze and the white fire glow. No one was shooting now. Someone had been, with a white fire projectile. There were hot spots on the walls where stone still glowed. Big holes, big weapon. This was an old part of the city where they used Chama's bones for building. Everything since the Accords was plascrete and polysteel, hexed against arson and accident. Hexes might not stop white fire. Not much did. A single lump of something burned in the street. Pavement had softened around it, cupping what appeared to be part of an arm, maybe? A very small arm. It was hard to see much detail in full night, without moons or stars or much illumination than the Tesla streetlights. Gare would see more with that optic. Gare would see, oh, all manner of things with it. Hexes, glyphs, maybe an aura, if the arm hadn't been too long detached. What she could see was a conspicuously empty street and doors conspicuously shut. Every window shuttered. It was that kind of neighborhood. One exception. The house right there that had no door. Windows smashed out. Most of the front wall spilled into the street where whatever had done for the front door had taken part of the building with it. Probably the origin of the arm.
"We are very much being observed,"
Gare said calmly, clearly.
"Every Satatir window."
"Copy that."
Iari dragged her handcom from its pouch behind her chestplate. A battle rig kept its comms in the helmet. Blessed four, she looked like a sieve making a call,
except her handcom linked straight to dispatch with a murmured command.
Dispatch, got a situation. One person down, presumed dead in Midtown. Looks like there might be a Whitefire weapon involved. I'm on site with the Five Tribes ambassador. Please advise. Over.
Dispatch said nothing. Iari guessed the comms were out again. The quantum hexes had been skiffy since the weep. Some explanation involving dimensional rifts and dense arithmetic theory. Knight Marshal Tobin had a report, scrolled thick as Iari's forearm, about why long-range comms couldn't be trusted. He used it to prop his window open on nice days for a breeze. Said he might hear his Templars calling for backup that way. Truth was, comms usually did fine over short distances, unless there was brood around. Which there were not, in the middle of B-Town. Not if there was anyone left alive in the neighborhood. Gare made one of those little hisses and pointed at a wedge of fallen wall.
"Your screamer's back there, I think, down to heavy breathing. You could go coax them out."
Oh, ungentle Ptah. Almost her whole life spent in the Aedis, first as a war orphan, then Templar. What hadn't been either of those had been spent in the army. She wasn't good with civilians, wasn't good with panic. "Or people," Gare would have said. She flicked a glance at him, where he squatted beside the corpse and made long-fingered gestures that were probably arithmancy and might be just show for the watchers in the windows. He was an ambassador. He could talk down a panicky civ. Or make it worse, being a Vakar. Iari hung the jacta back on her hip. Scared civs were afraid of weapons, right? Right. And pitched her voice toward the tumbled wall.
"Hey, you hiding back there. You hurt?"
She waited a beat, then went around the edge of the wall, left forearm raised, as if she had a shield gauntlet ready to deploy. The person back there might have a rock, a stick, something. The person had none of those things. Did have a pair of wide eyes, moon round and moon pale, matched to the nimbus of wispy hair fluffing off a very small round head. Elements defend a witchu in this neighborhood.
"My name's Lieutenant Iari. I'm a Templar."
That should be slagging obvious with the chest plate, but panic made people stupid. The witchu blinked. Kinda unnerving, the whole monochromatic eyeball thing. Impossible to tell where the attention was.
"Lieutenant?"
The witchu, she, he, maybe one of the other genders, said in unaccented comspec, hoarsely. "They, she, he, whatever," pushed carefully upright, using what remained of the wall for balance.
"No, no, I'm not hurt."
"You have a name?"
"Yenal Iyat."
Two glottal stops. That meant a female.
"You want to say what happened? Did you see who did this?"
Gare made a noise from behind her. One of those gravel click-in-the-throat Vakari laughs. Meant the opposite of funny, and also that Gare had thought of a cleverness he really wanted to say out loud and would not, being a diplomat. The witchu stared at Iari like drowning people cling to shipwrecks.
There was a Riev. I came to see my cousin, Pinjat, and there was a Riev inside, and it killed him. Then it ran out, and I thought it was going to kill me, but it didn't. People were screaming and running, and I just hid."
Riev?"
Leave off the obvious objection. Riev didn't kill Witchu. If Pinjat had been a protectorate Vakar 30 years ago, okay, maybe. But the Witchu had artificed the Riev to be shock troops for the Confederation. There were safeguards, both hexed and hardwired, that made Riev as reliable as sunrise. More reliable in systems too close to the Weep. They didn't just go doing this, any of it.
Yenal Iyat sniffed. "You don't believe me."
"Didn't say that."
"But you don't."
"Not my job, rendering judgment."
Not her job playing local PK either. Murders were out of her jurisdiction. Templars belonged to the Aedis, and the Aedis defended the Confederation against its enemies, external or internal or interdimensional. Since the Accords, when the Protectorate Vicari took themselves off that list, the Aedis only worried about brood surges. Rief murders, though, were impossible. That might just qualify as Templar jurisdiction. Iari prodded her handcom. This time it clicked, very faintly. She felt the hexes try to engage, felt them fizzle. Night Marshal Tobin would say,
"Use your judgment, Lieutenant."
He would mean,
"Damn right, get involved."
"Yanal Ilyat," her tongue tripped only a little bit. "Any idea why Ariev would go after your cousin?"
The witchu pinched a smile, tiny little pearls for teeth. "My cousin was an artificer during the expansion, Lieutenant."
A lot of witchu had been. That was no revelation.
"He worked on Ariev maintenance."
"Ah, well, that's why the Ariev came to him. They have, you know, problems sometimes, need repairs." "You also an artificer?"
"Me? No. I'm a linguist. I'm visiting from Windscar."
"That's a long way for a visit." "Not inexpensive either. A half day by ether ship. Fond of your cousin?"
"I am. I was."
The witchu clasped her hands together, stiff-armed, and stared down at them. She might have sniffled. "Oh, ungentle Ptah. Did you see what happened?"
"Not exactly. I was coming down the street. I heard noises coming from the house, so I started running, and then there was this flash."
"What kind of noises?"
"Ah."
Yanal Ilyat blinked. It was like watching two moons go through a sudden simultaneous eclipse.
"Banging, crashing. Then I saw the Ariev run out of the house. It dropped something and..."
She was ramping up again, mouth working, eyes all moist and panicky.
"I saw it was an arm and..."
"All right." Iari made what she hoped was a calm down gesture. She could hear Gera approaching, deliberate boot scuff so she could track him. She saw the glint of his optic reflected in the witchu's eyes.
"Lieutenant, the arm belonged to a witchu."
Yanal Ilyat made a tiny sound, like she had no air left in her lungs. Another small sound, this one an inhale. Her eyes got even wider, which Iari wouldn't have guessed was possible.
"That's of a car."
Iari grimaced. "Ambassador Ger Ivakat I Tarsik, this is..."
"Yanal Ilyat. Yes, I heard."
Ger bowed, very slightly, and bared a smile. Vicari teeth were etched and dyed with tribe, mothers, local district. Ger's dye was blue, ranging from cerulean to cyan, and all of it black in this light. He'd tried to teach her to read the code once, lost her at the incisors. Yanal Ilyat appeared to be fascinated. Wide-eyed, anyway, though that might be her standard expression.
"Ambassador," she said,
and followed his name with a stream of chopped-up, cystish syllables that sounded a lot like her cousin's house looked. Yanal Ilyat had said she was a linguist, right? Gare slid his gaze to Iari's. There was his real smile, in the slight narrowing of his eyes, and not a kind one either. The sort of smile that said, "I always wondered how witchu would taste." Iari drilled a look at him. "I'm going inside."
"Of course you are."
He peered down at Yanal Ilyat. She was on the small side of an already small species. She barely came up to Gare's chest.
"I'll stay here with Yanal Ilyat."
"Fine." Iari grimaced at him. At Yanal Ilyat, too, the top of her head anyway, in passing. "I'll be right inside." She took another stab at the comms. "Dispatch, listen, we have one dead in B-Town, a witchu artificer, and one witness who says it was a Ariev. I'm going into the house." "Oh, void spit." Blood spattered the walls in broad arcs, almost all the way to the ceiling. In some places, there were wide smears. There was one identifiable limb, a left arm, a hand, near the door. Iari stared down at it. The fingers still gripped a stylus. The witchu had been hard at work when this happened, unsuspecting. Bits of the witchu's insides dangled from the ceiling where they'd hit hard enough to stick. Be a mess when they dried and came down. More of a mess. Blessed elements. The Aedas had commissioned Riev to kill Vakari, hexed them to repel Whitefire, hexed them to repel Vakari battle arithmancy. But really, Riev were supplemental troops for the infantry, engineered to peel a Vakar marine out of their battle rig, armored to be impervious to Vakari talons and spikes and mildly toxic body fluids. Riev were made to take Vakari apart. And Vakari were a lot bigger and meaner than Witchu. Yanal Ilyat's cousin wouldn't have stood a chance. At least it had gone fast. Hard to say if he'd even had time to scream. Hard to say where his head was, for that matter. Iari clamped her teeth tight. She'd seen worse than this in the last surge of brood. Or at least, if not worse, comparable. It wasn't nausea crawling up her throat. It was anger. Because Ptah's burning eye, this was obscene, in the same way brood attacks were. Iari picked her way through the wreckage of the front room. It wasn't a living space. Cabinets and storage lockers lined the near wall. There was a workbench, upended and twisted in the corner. Equipment consisted with an artificer's trade, the styluses, the presses, the printing tiles, the small bottles of acid for etching the hex work, spread around the floor. Some of the bottles had smashed, their contents steaming and hissing their way through the rubber mats underfoot. A Tesla generator sparked in one corner, attempting and failing to ignite the acid-soaked tile beneath it. Iari squatted and dragged a small sheet of plain metal out from the edge of an overturned cabinet. There had been four neat columns of sigils on it and carefully perforated divisions. A standard hex of some kind, stamp-produced, ready to separate, charge, and sell. She set the sheet aside. And saw, gouged into a floor tile, local stone from the quarry, flecked and gray and hard, same stuff the Aedas compound was built from, a footprint, as clear as if the floor had been soft ground. Took a lot of force to make a mark like that. Took a hex to make stone act like mud. Same kind of hexes artificers put on the soles of Riev feet so that big metal bodies kept traction. There were, now that she looked, more of those footprints. Places the Riev had planted its weight to do whatever it was doing. Bracing to rip a cabinet out of the wall or upend a workbench or rip something, someone, into smaller pieces. Or it had been looking for something, flinging objects aside, tossing the room like a looter. An odd thought. Riev didn't have much use for things. But Riev didn't engage in random acts of destruction either, or shoot Whitefire. Iari straightened. Took an unwholesome lungful of blood and shit and spilled chemicals and let it out again. The smell turned itself to taste and clung to the inside of her mouth. The blood was appalling, but it wasn't excessive. One body's worth, a small body. That might be another limb over there, in a smear and pool at the edge of the room. And there, yes, that was most of a head, smashed against a door that presumably led to the back rooms, to a staircase that went up to the second floor, to the back alley. A closed door. An undamaged door. She pivoted again to look at the ruined front wall, at the wreckage of door and frame. All of that spilled out, consistent with something large and violent leaving the premises, not tearing its way in. Yanal Ilyat said her cousin had been an artificer who worked on B-Town's decommissioned Riev. So a Riev could walk up to that front door and get no special notice. The Riev could have knocked, and Pinjat would have let it in. And it didn't make sense that...
Iari?
Gare sounded a little too loud, a little too sharp.
For the love of Hrok and Ptah!
Iari whipped her head around, aimed a shout backward.
Keep her outside, Gare!
I need you out here, actually.
And then Iari heard the whine of a jackta coming online, and she understood why before Gare even finished saying,
The peacekeepers have just arrived.
Chapter 2. I think they might have shot Gare, except Yinal Iyat got in the way. Then they wanted to detain him, and I got in the way.
Night Marshal Tobin leaned back in his chair, fingers steepled, lips level. A neutral expression that the unwary or unwise might mistake for detached, disengaged, even disinterested.
And that settled it?
Iari had served a long time with Tobin. She knew what that stillness meant.
Might be a complaint coming. I wasn't polite.
He let his breath go gently, and she knew what that meant, too.
No might. I already have a protest on my Turing.
Oh, sure. Void spit quantum hex comms didn't work, but the hard cable Turing net did. Iari winced.
I'm sorry, sir.
The Night Marshal filled the obligatory city council post for the local Aedis representative, which was always a Templar, which always caused tension with the local PKs. Tobin made a point of letting B-Town do its own enforcement, of being the epitome of reason, of calm, the velvet glove over Aiden Fist, interfering only when necessary. Looked like Tobin wanted to go bare-knuckle right about now.
You're not and you shouldn't be. If the peacekeepers on duty were half as prompt in doing their jobs as they were about filing complaints, you wouldn't have been there at all.
Sir. The knot in her chest loosened. She let her weight shift just a little, heels to ball of foot and back, left to right. Tobin pointed with his chin.
Sit down, Lieutenant.
I'm fine, sir.
My neck isn't. I'm tired of looking up at you. Sit down and tell me what happened.
Gare's writing the report. A handsome man, Tobin, as humans went. Square jaw, medium brown hair streaked gray at the temple. Dark eyes, almost as dark as Gare's, set deep above cheekbones as high and sharp as an owl's. Those eyes narrowed now.
And when I am desirous of polysyllabic discourse and highly theoretical arithmetic speculation, I will read that report. Until then, sit and talk to me.
Sir. She hooked a foot around the chair and dragged it forward. The office furniture was a matched set, antique, local wood, heavy and serious, decorated with unpleasant ridges that found every knob in a woman's spine if she wasn't armored. Gare claimed not to mind, but Gare had his own set of unpleasant spinal ridges. Tobin cocked her a wry half-smile. He knew what those chairs were like. His own wasn't much kinder. Wider, with armrests. That was the difference. Iari sat carefully.
What I think is Ariev really killed that artificer. Place looked like an abattoir, but it was wrecked, like a whole platoon of Tenju went berserk in a bar fight. Gare found what he thought was a trail, bits of what was presumably Pinjat, accompanied by dents in the walls or broken street tiles. Looks like the Ariev ran into the Lowtown Warrens, into the Alwar section. Before we could go after it, the PKs showed up. They seemed more interested in detaining Gare than in following the trail, so...
She shrugged.
Rain last night probably washed what was left down to the river.
Ariev don't butcher people, that's...
Tobin stopped short of saying impossible.
Unprecedented.
Then I think we need to look into it, sir, because one of them did.
Tobin took the first muscle twitch on the road to a smirk. Stopped and held that position.
We? You think this is an Aedian matter?
I think it has to be, sir. It's Ariev. We built them. We turned them loose.
Tobin's smirk changed sides and turned grimace.
They were never under Aedian authority. They were never even leased to the Aedis. The Confederation commissioned and deployed them as supplemental military equipment, and the Confederation decommissioned them as...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?